John Banville won the Man Booker Prize in 2005 for his novel The Sea, so the literary world was stunned when his next work turned out to be a crime novel, Christine Falls, published under the pen name Benjamin Black. He's now followed that with a second installment in the Benjamin Black series that features a Dublin pathologist named Quirk. The Silver Swan is published by Henry Holt, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Mr. Banville back to the show, although it is my first time with Mr. Black, and I don't know, do you want me to call you John or Benjamin?
Yeah,
for this
I think we'll stick with John, although I have metamorphosed into two people, yeah, since you saw me last.
You've been very open about the fact that Benjamin Black is a pseudonym. In fact, your name is also on the book jacket. So why even do this? Is it because Graham Greene was quite clear. He just made a distinction between the literary novels and the entertainments.
Well, I mean, that's what I was doing. It was always going to be an open pseudonym. I was never going to pretend to be Benjamin Black.
Joyce Carol Oates with Rosamund Smith for a while, and people did not know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that right? Well, perhaps I should have hidden behind it. I don't know. But I just wanted to signal to John Banville readers that this was something new, this was something different, that it wasn't an elaborate postmodernist literary joke.
And Christine Falls has been nominated for an Edgar Award. I wonder if that's the first time that someone has might win both a Booker and an Edgar.
I'd be thrilled. I would really be thrilled.
Your first novel, Night Spawn, was about a writer named Ben White.
Yes.
Is Ben Black his noir alter ego?
I was going to take the name Benjamin White because I thought nobody remembered my early books. And my publishers and my agent said, well, we think Black would be better because, you know, it looks better, it sounds better. And besides, you get much nearer the top of the librarian's purchase lists, which are alphabetical. So I said, all right, I'll be Black.
One of the reviewers of your novel, Mephisto, wrote, it is a writer's rather than a reader's book. We cannot expect to understand or even like it at first reading. His books are written not to be enjoyed, but to be endured. Is that painful? But at the same time, I suspect that you were hoping to reach a wider audience with this book.
And that was probably a favorable review. You can imagine what the bad ones, you can imagine what the unfavorable ones were like. I am very unfortunate that I got a reputation early on as being a writer's writer, which is the worst thing you can be because other writers don't read you. And readers don't reach because they think that only writers read you. So yes, I did want to reach a wider audience. As Gore Vidal wonderfully said about Ronald Reagan, now that I'm in the springtime of my senescence, I thought it a good time to make a change. And I started doing these. And I feel like a schoolboy who's been given an extra Christmas holiday.
Well, one of your earlier novels, The Book of Evidence, which was shortlisted for the Booker, has been called a murder mystery. Did you think of that one as a genre work?
Well, you see, I don't like the idea of genre. To me, there are just good books and books that aren't good. I don't make distinctions. I think that true art can happen in any genre. I think Georges Simenon, James M. Cain, Richard Stark, they've written books which are, to me, works of art. They're also crime novels, but that's incidental.
These Quirk books are not traditional police procedurals, even Private Eye novels. Your hero is a Dublin pathologist who doesn't have a first name, is just Quirk. Where did that character come from?
I don't know, because he's completely unlike me. He's about twice the size that I am. He's terribly handsome. He seems to be irresistible to women. None of these things apply to me, I can tell you.
Has a drinking problem.
He has a drinking problem. The only drinking problem I have is that I can't afford good enough wine. In The Silver Swan, of course, he's given up the booze, or at least most of it he has, which gives him an extra edge. I don't know where he came from. I dredged him from some dark corner of my subconscious.
And we learn that he was rescued from an orphanage by a prominent judge and educated alongside the judge's son, Malachi. Mal became an obstetrician, Quirk a pathologist. So you have us coming and going there.
Oh, yes. Well, birth and death, you know, this is what all books are about in the end.
And then their names, their clues as to their personalities, Mal and Quirk?
Do you know, I never thought of that.
Really?
But you're probably right, yes. I never thought. Well, you see, Quirk is a perfectly common Irish name. Most people think that I've invented it. Most non-Irish people think, but it's a common Irish name. But I like it. I like the notion. I like Quirk. I like the fact that he's a bit of a dope, you know, like the rest of us. He's not a great sleuth. If you wanted the opposite of Sherlock Holmes, Quirk is your man. He misses clues.
Even though he's a scientist.
Yeah, well, he's not much of a scientist either. He's a bit of a fraud, and I quite like him for that. I like, you know, when I started to write these books, when I was a kid, I used to read Agatha Christie books, which are like crossword puzzles, you know. And then later on, I read books which are terribly violent. And neither of these seemed to me to be about real life. I mean, most of us never see any violence at all unless somebody bumps into the back of our car and shouts at us. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to write about ordinary people caught in a suddenly extraordinary circumstances.
And the books are set in Dublin in the 1950s. In crime fiction, the setting is often as important as the characters. Now, my memory of Dublin in the 50s comes from reading J.P. Dunleavy at the time. It seems like it's a very different city than it is today.
Oh, completely different. I mean, if you want to write noir fiction, Dublin in the 1950s is just the place. You know, all that.
And not today? It's just too successful?
Oh, it's true. Well, I'm sure you could write a different kind of crime fiction. It would mostly be to do with enormous drug gangs and, you know, the violence left over by the provosts who destroyed our moral sense completely. You know, few people remark on this, of the damage that the IRA did to our country. You know, destroyed the whole notion of sanctity of human life, and did great damage to the moral fiber. So it would be a different kind of noir fiction that would be written now. But I liked going back to the 1950s because of all that cigarette smoke and fog and Catholic guilt and secrets very deeply hidden.
You're one of the rare successful Irish writers who continues to live in Ireland, in Dublin. Pretty much everybody else throughout the history of Ireland went into exile.
Yes, writers always went into exile. Nobody ever emigrated. They all went into exile.
Well, have you been treated more kindly than Edna O'Brien, for example?
Oh, no. I mean, the people who were slightly before my generation, I'm being very careful here talking about Edna, slightly before my generation, they were treated very unkindly indeed. I mean, John McGahan was a wonderful writer. He was a school teacher. He lost his job because he published a book that was banned. Although John always said that it wasn't so much that the book was banned, but the fact that he had married a Finnish woman who was divorced. He said that the Christian brother who was his boss called him in and said to him, "John, we don't mind so much about that book being banned, but why did you have to marry a foreign divorced woman, and the women of Ireland with their tongues hanging out for a man?" And McGarren said, "Well, their tongues weren't hanging out in my direction."
Joyce also was kind of pushed out. But in
I don't think Joyce was pushed out. I don't think Beckett was pushed out. They wanted to move to Europe, and it suited them to take the stance of people driven into exile. You know, Ulysses was never banned in Ireland. It's one of the rare books that was not banned.
Banned here instead.
Yeah, banned here.
In both of your Benjamin Black novels, the victims are women, and the plots revolve around the constraints that women had to face in those days. So you are dealing with social commentary here.
I didn't think so at the time, but I suppose, yes, I am. Certainly women were horribly treated in Ireland in those days. I mean, I remember growing up when my mother and the women that I knew in those days were struggling to have some kind of life in this hierarchical society, this patriarchal society, run on the one side by unscrupulous politicians and on the other side by unscrupulous churchmen.
Another thing that makes the 50s sensible for these books is that he wouldn't have had the kind of forensic tools.
Exactly, yes. I didn't have to do any research.
Well, you don't have to worry about DNA and all of that. And that really does make the whole profession quite different.
It does, and I find the whole thing boring, frankly. What's interesting in books is people, not science or technology, I think. Maybe I'm hopelessly old-fashioned.
Although you do,
Quirk doesn't seem to know any more about pathology than I do. So.
You also deal with that whole matter of DNA in another way, because Quirk's wife Delia died in childbirth, and their daughter Phoebe was raised by his adoptive brother Mal and his wife Sarah, and Phoebe didn't even know that she wasn't.
Well, this is one of the things about the 50s, as I said, very dark secrets, very deeply hidden. There was lots of that stuff going on. Frequently, for instance, if a young girl had a child and wasn't married, the mother would take the child as her own and pretend. So that lots of children grew up in Ireland thinking that their mothers were their sister, whereas in fact they were their mother. I mean, you know, it's Catholicism imposed some strange constraints upon us.
The Silver Swan, in that book, Quirk is called by a college classmate whose wife had committed suicide and asked not to have an autopsy performed. He agrees, and then he does the autopsy anyway.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, this is another part of Ireland in those days, and probably still, that it is deeply, how would I say, deceptive, shall we say.
And I should have mentioned Christine Falls is all about adoption. So you really are dealing with an Ireland that you grew up in that was a troubled country.
Oh, it was a very dark and troubled place, yes. Of course, there were flashes of light, as there always are. We wouldn't have survived if we didn't. But it was a dark place.
Will there be more books in this series, the Quirk series? Because you've done a serial for the New York Times called The Lemur, and that's also by Benjamin Black, but it's not a Quirk story.
It's set in the present day. There will be more Quirk books. I certainly want to write the next one centered largely on Phoebe, who has become a very interesting character. She was not very important in the first book in Christine Falls, but in The Silver Swan she's very important indeed. And I like her. My agent insists that I'm in love with her. Maybe I am. So I'll have to write about this love object next time around.
And what about John Banville? Does he have any novels in the works?
Oh, yeah. So I'm working on a John Banville novel.
So are you working on them simultaneously?
No, I can't do that. I wish I could, but I can't. I have to be one or the other. So I'm hoping to clear the next year or so to finish John Banville book, which I started in 2004. So it's been going for a long time.
And then, well, you started in 2004. Obviously, you put it aside to work on the Black.
I put it aside and I went back to work on it. I've written about 25,000 words of it so far. But it's going to be a long book, so it'll take at least another year.
Well, the book we've been talking about, The Silver Swan, was written by Benjamin Black, who's also the author of Christine Falls. And the book is published in this country by Henry Holt. I want to thank the man who claims he's Benjamin Black, John Banville, for being on our show again today.
Thank you from both of us.
On tomorrow's show, Susan Jacoby looks into the roots of our current wave of political and social apathy. Then David Strathern and Tony Award-winning playwright Richard Nelson on Conversations in Tusculum, the new play at the Public Theater. Also, Alan Cumming talks about starring in a revival of Chekhov's The Seagull. And Gabriel Byrne discusses the demands of playing a therapist 5 nights a week on HBO's innovative series In Treatment. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Angela Sheldon, Fran Jacobs, Barbara Kahn, and Tanya Mirza. Jay Kaut was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening, and happy St. Patrick's Day.